Hello there. Today is Tuesday, October the 18th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, 3 weeks until Americans vote as Donald Trump ramps up accusations of foul play.
They even want to try to rig the election at the polling booths. And believe me, there's a lot going on.
The third and final debate is Wednesday, so what should we expect? An emotional reunion as the freed Chibok girls are reunited with their families. Also ahead, a major step in the world's effort to fight climate change. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, with just 3 weeks to go before Americans vote for a new president, Republican Donald Trump is ramping up his contention that the election is being rigged in Hillary Clinton's favor and arguing that the media is biased and dishonest.
The media is trying to rig the election by giving credence, and this is so true, by giving credence to false stories that have no validity and make it a front page. They take a story with absolutely nothing that didn't exist, and they put it front page news because they want to poison the minds of the voters.
Well, the allegations have not been substantiated as Trump continues to trail in the polls 3 weeks ahead of the November 8th election. And with the final debate this week, Bill Clinton is campaigning on his wife's behalf, telling a group of college students that Donald Trump wants to take America back 50 years.
I don't want the social order we had 50 years ago. I don't want an America that's less fair to African Americans, that's less fair to Latino Americans, is less fair to first-generation immigrants, that makes the LGBT community hide in a closet somewhere, and it gives women the shaft in the workforce. I don't want that kind of America. And I don't think you do.
Well, the latest national polls Monday showed Clinton with a growing lead over Trump. Let's talk more about the election with Democratic political strategist Ellis Hennekin. Ellis, thanks for being here. What do you think we can expect from Wednesday's debate?
I guess we should look at history, listen to history, please. Donald seems to be inching more and more in the direction of trying to undermine the legitimacy of the vote. Talking about the election being rigged, unclear frauds that are being perpetrated, about global conspiracies. And I guess we're likely to get a lot of that, a lot of media bias allegations, a lot of comments about some of the folks who stepped forward and made accusations. Clinton, I think, is likely to want to deflect most of that. Again, I don't think there are a lot more people that she can convince that Donald Trump is unfit. So I would suspect that we will see her pivot more in the direction of trying to make the case about her vision as president, trying to reach out to millennials, to Bernie Sanders voters, to nervous Republicans, to people that she might be able to get to if she can just give them a reason. Not that Donald Trump is bad, but that the Hillary Clinton vision is something that they can get behind. It really is time for her to do that.
Is there any way he can turn anything around at this point?
Yeah. I mean, she can mess up badly. He can somehow or another get back to the things that I think are the growth potential for him. Tapping into that feeling of anxiety out there, the middle class angst that spreads across America. You know, there are a lot of people who are not very happy with the direction the country is going. And Hillary Clinton is not the perfect candidate. So the tragedy from the Trump point of view, I guess, is that that potentially winning message has gotten sidetracked on the way to all this craziness. And, you know, maybe it's not too late for him to veer back in that direction.
You mentioned Donald Trump talking about a rigged election. He's really ramping up that allegation, regardless of the fact that there is no proof to substantiate that. He's not doing well in the polls. How worrisome are those kinds of accusations?
You know, it's interesting because it hasn't even been fully clear what he means by rigged. We
right.
used to think that meant that somehow something was explicitly being stolen through some dirty technique. What he seems to be focusing on really is, as you say, bad poll numbers and negative stories in the media. Most of the rigging, apparently, constitutes interviews with women who claims that he treated them in a bad way, or stories about other things that are unflattering. listen, negative campaigning has always been part of this game, and both sides play it effectively. We've not had a candidate, though, at least not in modern times, who has called so directly into question the very mechanism by which we elect presidents and peacefully transfer power from one side to the next. And I think it leaves the country in kind of a dark spot if there are those 35 or 40% of people who think the whole thing was a fraud.
Do you think that the continued release of these WikiLeaks could hurt Hillary Clinton more, or do you think that Donald Trump's situation with all these women coming forward really overshadows that?
And so far, the Trump stories have overshadowed it, but yeah, it could definitely be damaged. I mean, there's stuff in there that, I wouldn't call it a smoking gun, but I mean, there are things in there that are not particularly flattering. In another environment, I would say they could have been deeply damaging. Hillary ought to hope that there's enough other noise that whatever's coming next, and we don't know what it is, but whatever's coming next, it doesn't have that kind of damage.
Some of Donald Trump's supporters are threatening a coup, and some of them are even talking about violence. How concerned do you think law enforcement officials around the country are for this?
It's hard to know, I think, is the true answer. I mean, people do say a lot of crazy stuff that they don't act on, but there is some genuine anger out there, and I think people who do feel very disconnected, disenfranchised, as if things are being stolen from them. And so, I just think we need to approach it with a certain amount of caution. I just don't think we know yet, but I don't think we can, if it keeps heading in this downward spiral, I don't think we can afford to ignore those possibilities.
All right, that is Democratic strategist Ellis Hennekin. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, turning now to social media and what's trending online with G. Abby Lee. G, I hear U.S.-based Tesla Motors is in the hot seat. What's that about?
So that's because Tesla was scheduled to unveil a new product Monday without really specifying what that is, but pushed the announcement to Wednesday. Tesla Motors is an American automaker and energy storage company best known for its electric cars. People are talking about the delay online because it's not really the first time Tesla pushed back its product announcement. More than a week ago, its CEO Elon Musk tweeted the company will unveil a product. And on late Sunday, he tweeted the announcement will be pushed back to Wednesday because they need a few more days of quote-unquote refinement.
So what's the social media reaction like?
Understandably, the overriding sentiment is that of disappointment. But some Tesla fans are tweeting that even though Musk never hits a deadline, he always gets it right. Other people are joking. He's straight up tweeting work emails. I kind of like that because it's very transparent, so we get the updates from the company via Twitter. But maybe that's just me.
What else would be trending?
There are many serious topics trending on social media, including violence in Mosul and the attack on the Republican headquarters, but they don't compare to the popularity of the book and movie series Harry Potter. On Facebook alone, more than 260,000 people are talking about a new set of makeup brushes that look like magic wands. They're produced by a U.S.-based company, The Geeky Cauldron. Lori, back to you.
All right. Thanks so much, G. And you can follow her at G. Abby Lee. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Kurdish soldiers report initial success in the battle to retake Mosul. A U.S. man pleads guilty to trying to help Islamic State. Austria plans to demolish Hitler's birthplace. And Billy Bush is fired from NBC after his role in the Trump tape. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, the 21 girls released by Nigerian militant group Boko Haram have been reunited with their families, and Nigeria's government has raised the prospect of negotiating the release of an additional 83 girls from Abuja. Chika Adua has the latest on the girls' release and what could be ahead.
These are the voices of families in tears as they celebrate the return of 21 Chibok girls.
When she saw me, she couldn't say anything. She was just crying, you know. And she was saying it was just like a dream, as if it's something they've given up on. Then never thought they would make it through, but lo and behold, they are out, and it's that smell of freedom or something else.
Dr. Alan Manasseh described the moment one of his cousins saw him on Sunday at the official reunion ceremony with other Chibok families in Abuja. He reunited with two of his cousins who were kidnapped by Boko Haram in April 2014 from their secondary school in Chibok. One is named Gloria Dame, who was 18 years old when she was kidnapped. The other one is Mariamu Lawan. When he saw them, he became overwhelmed. He also notes they looked like they had suffered.
I say it's difficult to describe the feeling, They look leaner than when they were abducted.
None of his cousins came back with any children, Manasseh says. He also said they told him they were not forced to marry any Boko Haram members. But their lean bodies are proof that they experienced hunger while they were held captive by Boko Haram. One of the cousins, Gloria, said some of the girls had no food to eat for 40 days. The Nigerian government says talks are continuing to bring back another 83 of the nearly 200 girls kidnapped by Boko Haram. Whether or not a ransom was paid for the 21 released last week remains unclear. The Nigerian government denied a report from the Associated Press that millions of dollars were paid by the Swiss government on behalf of Nigeria. The Nigerian government also says no imprisoned Boko Haram members were exchanged for the girls. But Iman Shehu, one of the leaders of the Bring Back Our Girls movement that has advocated for the kidnapped girls' release, doubts the government's story.
We think that something happened, that even when government say officially nothing happened, it turns out that something did happen. That has always been the history of negotiating for hostages in the hands of terrorists.
Shehu says the group will watch for the rest of the month to see if other girls are rescued. If not, it will continue to put pressure on the Nigerian government. For now, Chibok families will hold on to the memory of what it felt like to hold their daughters for the first time in 2 years. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
And you're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Join us for VOA's coverage of the most important U.S. political event of the year. Americans will decide who their next president will be. We'll have all the context, commentary, and analysis with our coverage of the U.S. presidential election. Right here on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Well, welcome back to International Edition here on VOA. It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month in the United States, and we are highlighting the issue once a week on this program. As I mentioned last week, it's personal. I'm a two-time survivor, and my hope is that speaking out will help other women. Joining me today is Karuna Jagger, Executive Director of the San Francisco-based organization Breast Cancer Action. Karuna, thank you for being with us. Let's talk about your latest campaign, Think Before You Pink. What does that mean? Tell us.
You mentioned Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. Here at Breast Cancer Action, we call it Breast Cancer Industry Month because of the overwhelming number of pink ribbon products flooding the market. And all too often, these pink promotions do more for corporations' bottom lines than they do for women's health. In 2002, we launched our Think Before You Pink campaign, calling for more accountability and transparency in breast cancer fundraising. And as part of that, we coined the term pinkwashing to refer to companies that claim to care about breast cancer, often by putting a pink ribbon on their products, but are not taking the necessary steps to ensure that their products or services are not contributing to increased risk of the disease, those environmental exposures that are really driving this epidemic. So each year, we call out a particular corporate campaign that we think is a particularly egregious pinkwasher. This year, we are targeting two of the nation's largest citrus companies. They have put pink ribbons on their produce while using oil wastewater from oil corporate leftover from oil production to irrigate their produce. So BC Citrus puts a pink ribbon on their Sweetheart Mandarin bags, and Wonderful Citrus, which are those are the producers of those popular Halo mandarins, they participate in a marketing promotion called Pink Ribbon Produce. Both of these companies are using pink ribbons to sell their products. They say they care about women with breast cancer, and yet they're failing to take a basic step to protect farm workers and the public from any potential health risks associated with using oil wastewater to irrigate their citrus. Wow. We call this pink washing.
So when we see different products that have pink ribbons, is it often just a pink ribbon that really isn't doing anything more than sort of drawing awareness?
Anybody can put a pink ribbon on anything, and they do. We see pink ribbon handguns, pink ribbon garbage trucks, pink ribbon, you know, anything, you name it. Sometimes companies are putting pink ribbons on products and are not making any donation to a breast cancer organization. Other times they may be making a donation, but often it's smaller than the consumer expects. For example, some popular credit card companies say they will donate, but they're donating one penny per purchase, no matter what the size of the purchase. So we at Breast Cancer Action always try to help people make informed decisions, whether it's about their breast cancer treatments or their screening options or about their pink ribbon purchases. And so we've created four questions to help people evaluate pink ribbon products. The first question is, does any money go to support a breast cancer organization? If so, how much, and is it enough? The third question is there a cap on the donation? Because often you'll see a company say they will donate up to, say, $25,000, and you don't know if your purchase is going to be part of that donation or if the cap is already met and every penny from your purchase is going straight to the corporation. Our fourth question comes back to this question around pink washing. Does this product put you or someone you love at increased risk of breast cancer? And over the years, we have seen everything from perfume that contains hormone disruptors. Now, we know that breast cancer is a hormone-driven disease. And the country's largest breast cancer charity, Susan G. Komen, in 2011, put out a perfume called Promise Me that contained hormone disruptors and other chemicals of concern, urging women to buy this. We were very concerned that it may increase a woman's risk of breast cancer, and in some cases, hormone disruptors can actually interfere with the efficacy of the most common treatment, tamoxifen.
When we see things like, I don't know, the National Football League wearing pink, is that a good thing? Does that help in some way? Where do you stand on that?
The NFL has had a woman problem for many years because of domestic and sexual violence issues. They've also had a concussion issue. And several years ago, they distracted from that by taking up this crucial catch campaign to talk about breast cancer screening and how much they care about women's health. Unfortunately, their campaign relies on misleading health information. Like any company that's trying to sell a product, they need to sell a story, and they need to sell simple solutions. And get a mammogram is a simple, sounds like a simple solution. It sells products. Unfortunately, screening has not changed the death rate here in the United States. The value of screening is vastly overestimated, and each year tens of thousands of women are actually overdiagnosed and overtreated rather than having their life saved. It's a complicated issue, but it's a really important issue. Unfortunately, we have corporate marketers giving us bad public health information, and the NFL is a prime example of that.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective. Karina Jagger, Executive Director of Breast Cancer Action. Over the past weekend, more than 150 countries reached a landmark deal in Kigali, Rwanda, to reduce carbon emissions. The United Nations says the agreement signed Saturday is a major breakthrough. Joining me to talk about it, Dr. John Abraham with the School of Engineering at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota.
What recently happened is enough countries have ratified what's called the Paris Climate Agreement that the agreement is actually going to go into force in November. And this agreement's important because it commits countries to cutting emissions so that we can avoid the worst outcomes from climate change. So we scientists have been saying for years that if we want to avoid the worst effects of climate change, we need to keep the temperature increase down. We need to minimize it, keep it to about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit. And to do that, we need everyone on board. We can't just have one country taking action without other countries. So we need an international agreement where everyone decides to take action collectively. And what just happened was such an agreement came into place, an agreement driven by science that has enough countries signed on to it that we have collective action. And that action is expected to keep us below this 3.5 degree Fahrenheit temperature increase. And by 2100, we will have a climate neutral world economy.
Will we really be able to reverse course, or would this be more like slowing down what's happening?
Humans have emitted so much heat-trapping gases into the atmosphere that we can't stop it. We can't reverse course. But what we can do is really, really important. What we can do is slow it down, have the Earth level off at a temperature that's safe. And when I say safe, I mean we can avoid some of the worst disasters of climate change that are really, really expensive in terms of dollar cost and in terms of lives. So what this agreement is going to do is result in a leveling off of global warming at a temperature that is going to avoid the most serious consequences. We can't dial back what we've done in the past, but we sure can limit the danger that can come in the future, and that's what this agreement's done.
We've been seeing some pretty intense storms, like Matthew. Would you attribute these types of events to the warming planet?
Well, there's some things that we can really attribute to the warming planet. The most obvious thing is a warmer planet makes the planet both drier, but it makes the atmosphere more moister. And what that means is when it rains heavier, but it rains less frequently. So our swings between drought and flood become more severe. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that right now in California, where they're having the worst drought they've had in 1,200 years. But what about some of these other things, like these tropical storms you mentioned? What we've done to the climate has added about 20% of the rainfall from a typical tropical storm now. So 20% of the rainfall from Matthew was human-induced. The answer to your question is all current weather is affected by climate change. We're making storms more severe. And the typical numbers for hurricanes like Matthew is it's about 20% worse.
Should we just expect that to be the new normal?
This isn't the new normal. The new normal is going to be worse than today's normal. You know, we talked about can we stop climate change? The answer is we can't stop it. But with agreements like Paris, we can make sure it doesn't get too bad. But the new normal in the future is going to be worse than what we're seeing today. And that's just a fact, but it doesn't mean that we can't do something meaningful to limit the cost to the future. And that's what the Paris Agreement's done. So we're doing great work. We've got to keep up with it. And what this weather is showing us is sort of the tip of the iceberg. But it's a good warning call. It's a clarion call for us to take action.
All right. Dr. John Abraham, climate scientist at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota. Well, while Americans deal with the obesity epidemic, more than ever, they are looking for ways to get fit, including with a little help from new technology. VOA's Kevin Enox has the story.
U.S. gym membership has been steadily increasing since 2000, and these days more than 50 million Americans belong to a gym, in part because one-third of Americans are obese and two-thirds are officially classified as overweight. People are also more likely to be monitoring their health with wearable technology, which is one of the biggest fitness trends of the year. Amy Dixon of Equinox Fitness is all for it.
You know, what's interesting about the trends for 2016 is that they're really rooted in the basics. And what I love about that is all of the technology that's coming out of what it takes to get fit, what it takes to get healthy, and the science is supporting all of that. So I look at all these trends and I smile because there's stuff that we've known, but we're applying it in such more technologically advanced ways.
The goal of all this wearable tech is to make keeping fit simpler. And simplicity seems to be the other big trend of the year. Body weight workouts and high-intensity interval training do not require much equipment or time.
I love it. It's challenging. It's quick. You have high intensity and you get short breaks, recovery. It uses strength. It uses cardio. It's kind of getting both platforms in one.
Workout regimens for older Americans are also on the rise. And yoga continues to make inroads into U.S. fitness routines. The Yoga Alliance says more than 36 million Americans have done yoga this year. But all that technology cannot change the fact that, according to the President's Council on Physical Fitness, only one in three adults exercise as often as they should. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition on VOA. Thanks for joining us. Find us anytime at voanews.com. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, recently sanctioned two individuals, Gabriel Amisi Kumba and John Numbi, following increasing indications that the government of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, continues to suppress political opposition in the country, often through violent means. Specifically, on September 28th, the United States designated John Numbi for engaging in actions or policies that undermine democratic processes or institutions in the DRC, and Gabriel Amisi Kumba for being the leader of an armed group that has threatened the peace, security, or stability of the DRC. These steps reflect the United States' continued commitment to disrupt this destructive behavior and foster a better and more stable future for the DRC and the Congolese people. As a result of these actions, all of the designated individuals' assets within U.S. jurisdiction are frozen, and U.S. persons are generally prohibited from engaging in transactions with them. In announcing these designations, John Smith, acting OFAC director, stated, "These current and former Democratic Republic of the Congo government officials have engaged in actions that undermine democratic processes in the DRC and repress the political rights and freedoms of the Congolese people, risking further and more widespread instability in the DRC and the broader Great Lakes region. This action is not directed against the people of the DRC. It is intended to alter the behavior of the targeted individuals." DRC state agents have reportedly continued to violate the human rights and fundamental freedoms of people in the DRC, including through the use of excessive force in response to political demonstrations. Most recently, large-scale demonstrations in Kinshasa on September 19th and 20th, in response to delays in the announcement of elections, erupted into violent clashes, resulting in fatalities between demonstrators and security forces in Kinshasa and elsewhere in the country. There were reports of lethal use of force by DRC state agents in response to the recent demonstrations, as well as violent criminal acts committed by individuals in Kinshasa. The violence of September 19th and 20th underscores the need for an inclusive dialogue process on an electoral timetable to ensure a peaceful and democratic transfer of power. The United States continues to call on all stakeholders to refrain from violence. In this respect, we would stress that the government and its security forces have an obligation to respect and ensure human rights, and we would note that violence will hinder, not enhance, the prospects for an inclusive dialogue.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.